Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey, and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is Jordan Michael. I have Corey on the line here. Here with another weekly show. And we touched on a few things last week. We had a special guest, Daryl, who came in at the end and told a really fantastic and interesting story about his experience where he successfully negotiated himself out of a very tight situation. And this week we have my good buddy and close friend, Frank Adamo. He's a very, very smart individual. He does thousands of hours of research into these different types of processes and freedom movement things, if you will, for lack of a better term. He studied how not to do it, just like we have. And so we're going to have him on. He also is going to share his story near the end of the show. He had a recent experience, and we're going to try to analyze that live on the air so our listeners can get a little experience. Corey, I believe we did promise them last week we'd touch a little bit on the Burns, Oregon thing, the whole situation out there that's just completely gone to shit. What are your thoughts on that, if you just want to start us off?
Well, I was a little taken aback by the whole Bundy scenario and how the situation in Oregon was just completely taken over by, I don't know, it was like a carpetbagger move, for lack of a better terminology. And the whole thing got taken over by some outside forces and, you know, has resulted in where it's at today with the loss of one life. And, if we could go back to the beginning, it seemed like there were some strange things going on with the Hammonds and their run-ins with the authorities and so forth. I believe they had some, they were trying to do controlled burns on their property or something, and they got out of hand a little bit, got into some Bureau of Land Management property, and they were charged for that. And then they cooperated and did their time, and then they were told by the judge they had to come back and do more time, and I don't know, it just seemed kind of weird. Overall, I would say that had they known some of the things that we know about contracting, they would have been able to settle this matter a long time ago. And subsequently would have been able to avoid this really kind of unfortunate escalation of things that it seems to arrive at now, which has completely overshadowed the original issues that the Hammonds had. So,
yeah, I totally agree with that. This is a pattern that we've seen repeat over and over and over. I do really want our listeners to know that the whole freedom movement and patriot movement, if you will, again, this is, we've got to classify these things because there's a lot of different people with a lot of different intentions involved. But for the most part, it's very misinformational. There's a lot of mythology that's being relied upon, and when you're coming from that space and you're so sure that what you're doing is right, and you find out, well, nope, that actually didn't work, you can't continue to try to press that matter. So what I'm referring to is all this constitutional right stuff that these guys keep coming back to, and obviously it's not working, right? So they need to be contracting and making private agreements and holding people liable and so on and so forth. It does appear that for whatever reason, they were specially targeted, because I've never heard anybody being told to come back and serve more time unless they, unless it's something that's not being told, that maybe they set more fires, what have you.
Right. A little double jeopardy. Right. I mean, you can't be tried for the same crime twice.
But even then, that's their burden and obligation to know their duties and their rights and how to negotiate those without just going rah, 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 I'm standing on my constitutional rights and I'm a blah, 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 you know. And
or,
so,
or just going back in. I mean, they were ready to go back in. They were cooperating, you know. It wasn't until the Bundy thing came in my from my perspective, that it really started getting out of hand.
Yeah,
you know, go ahead.
Without condemnation... You know, there's a lot of good people involved. There's a lot of good people putting their intent and their hearts and their lives and their livelihoods and their energy on the line. I recognize it. I acknowledge it. And I, you know, I commend them for that. What I'm merely saying is that there's a better way to resolve things without shifting into an energy state that's going to self-manifest your results. You know, you have all these people, the entire government is corrupt. The entire government is bad. We're going to arm ourselves to the teeth. Not for protection and not just to engage our rights, but to, for the specific purpose of, you know, hoping for a battle or hoping that, you know, some sort of standoff is going to take place. You've got 100 people in one tiny area putting out the same energy or energetic. Well, what do you think is going to happen? So that's my whole take on the thing. I do believe that, you know, it was originally the Hammonds issue. Somehow it got blown up into this whole big, you know, let's start our common law grand juries and let's take over this, you know, this, you know, ranger station, what wildlife refuge station, whatever it was, to protest. Let's arm ourselves to the teeth. Let's, you know, let's take a do or die stance where they could have just contracted with the BLM and put everything, you know, on their terms and then held them accountable. Right. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a government sympathizer. I don't say, oh, you know, we should all just bend over. Obviously, I don't do that. If anybody that knows me knows that's the, you know, the farthest thing from the truth. What I will say is this: if there's a way you can resolve an issue without wasting time, valuable energy, without putting yourself in danger or at risk, take that path, right? Don't choose the difficult portion. And so what we've seen is actually the issue in Oregon transition from being about the Hammonds protest, then tying into the BLM, then tying into the Bundy's issue that they had with the BLM, which I acknowledge there is a real issue going on, but these guys need to learn how to stand up in a different way, you know, contractually, if they're going to get successful results.
Same with the Bundy's. Same with the Bundy's.
Yep.
If they didn't, if they had contracted differently, they wouldn't have had a problem.
Yeah. I do also see some elements of subterfuge and conspiracy and government assassination. And again, I want to remind the listeners, my understanding, just my opinion, you can take this in a couple cents and go buy a cup of coffee with it if you want. It's what it's worth. Okay. My opinion is that the government and all governments are extremely and highly factionalized. You have different groups with different intents and different ranges of power and different leaders and different controllers and different secret handlers, so on and so forth. So you've got all these smorgasbord of programs and need-to-knows and eye-washing techniques and so on and so forth. So nobody is really knowing what's going on except for a given few. So all the people that are just doing their job and taking orders, no, I don't believe that they're intentionally, you know, with the exceptions of a few, I don't believe that they're intentionally looking to seek and kill and imprison American citizens and kick down their doors, right? I will say this, in this Oregon thing, you know, somebody supposedly died in their garage after stockpiling all their weapons there. There's some sort of huge explosion out of nowhere and it killed that person. And then, you know, you have Lavoie Finicum, who was a very influential person and seemingly a very organizational influence on that whole thing. They were trying to do a few elements like common law grand jury, some of those types of things, but I believe they're trying to do them in the wrong way. You can't convene in a warlike stance and expect to hold somebody to, you know, a peacetime law or something like that. So they're all convened, armed to the teeth, for the purpose of, you know, some sort of showdown, if you will, and they're trying to issue offers from that as opposed to issuing a treaty first. Right, you can't open. You can't say, "Hey, we might go to war with you," and then try to, you know, open negotiations with no formal intro. It just doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
that's my whole take on the thing. The video of him being shot, Finnecombe is whom I'm referring to. That could go either way in my mind. I do know that at some point I had seen a picture of a pistol on his right hip, meaning that if he does carry, he's probably right-handed. I don't believe that he was reaching for a gun. I think he was covering up a bullet wound. And what makes me think that, or leads me to believe that, is there was a sharpshooter obviously coming out of the tree. So that it spells intent. They intended to interdict with deadly force.
It was an ambush.
It was an ambush. And what I'm saying is, it's not the whole FBI. It's not the whole whoever was there. It's a certain individual up top that gave the order to somebody and said, you don't need to know why this order is or who it's coming from or where, the reasoning. Just do it. Or maybe some false information. This guy's heavily armed. They're coming to do this or that, so on and so forth. And then the other element you have to this is all these different hecklers and these people making trouble in the community, which are supposedly undercover agents, right? And then you've got some subversion inside the group itself, So now we have the Hammonds in jail, Corey. We have four people, to the latest of my knowledge, standoffs left inside who are trying to ask to leave. They're asking now from a position of weakness, oh, we'll leave if you don't charge us. Now you've got an escalation team of FBI and other federal agencies that are already mobilized and have wasted hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of man hours and dollars.
Right. Doesn't sound like a win-win to me.
That's right. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and go to commercial break. That's my take on the whole thing, okay? I don't care what anybody else says. It's just my opinion. I've analyzed the whole situation. Condolences to Finnecombe's family, but he totally brought it on himself. I don't care what anybody else says. I heard the videos. He totally energetically brought it on himself. And death is not the end. It's just a new beginning, so I am not really that sad about it. I think that he is in a more expansive state, and, we can only wish him the best and just go from there. So we're going to run to commercial real quick. When we come back, we're going to have Frankie on. He's going to talk a little bit about his research, where he comes from, and then he'll share a story at the end. Thank you very much.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debts? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. We spoke on the Burns, Oregon issue. We also have a guest here today. His name is Frankie, Frank Adamo, to be specific. And Corey, will you please introduce him and get him going? And I'm very excited to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, man. Frank Adamo. We know Frank from a little ways back. Welcome to the show, man. Give a little, tell us a little bit about yourself, man. What's going on?
It's nice to be on, and whole bunch of things going on. I'll give you a little background. I guess I've been studying this commerce stuff for a little over 4 years now. Came across it. I think I seen something about accepted for value, and I was thinking, wow, if I could, do an acceptance and satisfy my debts, that'd be really great. And then, I tried some things which didn't seem to work. And then I just dove into the research. There's a guy on YouTube, Stop the Pirates. He has, some stuff that information. It was really cheap, and you know, I ordered that, and it was just a treasure trove of information on you know, processes and things like that, and then I came across the redemption manual, which, you know, I read that and started to do some of those things, and then came.
You have the unique experience of trying all of these different range of people and techniques, and that's why I love having you on here, man. What results did you get from some of these different types of things at first?
You know, not a whole lot of success. I mean, right off the bat. I mean, when I did the redemption thing, you know, it was putting in the bonds through Treasury and all of that, and, you know, they never answered any of it, so my understanding is they were in agreement with all that. So, you know, I kind of set myself up. Actually, when I did that, I did the UCC1, and I put the lien on the name and all things like that. And that actually I had a good success with, because I had some credit card issues where they got a judgment against me, and they actually tried to put a, they put a lien on the bank account, my bank account. And then when I went down to the bank to explain to them that, you know, I had the superior lien holder on that name, they had already said, oh, no, that was removed. That was never actually, even though I got a letter from the bank that said, you know, it was in place and there was certain things they could take and some they couldn't take, it actually never really went through, I guess, because the person who put the lien on realized that if they did take any money, they'd have to give it to me first, because I was the first lien holder for any money that would.
So what they did instead, and this is why a lot of the people that try things that may actually work still, like you're talking about, a lot of people might get thrown off track, because you said you got the letter, but there was no lien that had been taken off. And what that means is that they engaged a risk management offer to you. They wanted to try one last time. Can we try to get him to pay us? Since we can't actually do the lien thing, because then we got to pay him first, can we get him to pay us through a recontract and make it seem like there's a lien or something of that sort? And when you came down and said, oh, no, 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 here's what's really going on, here's my other offer, my reoffer, they were forced to acknowledge the truth to you. And that's very interesting, because a lot of people will be thrown off if they don't actually follow through. They'll think, oh, this just didn't work.
Yeah. So that was one of my first experiences of, you know, getting a success or having some of my paperwork actually do something that I needed it to do.
Okay, and then what have you moved into since then, if you could tell our listeners?
Well, then I, you know, I started studying Winston Shroud's information and, you know, in detail, and really went through almost all of his seminars. Went to a few of the things, and you know, he had some processes and things like that, which you know, make a lot of sense. But my experience with them was they didn't really work. I mean, there was even the appointment of fiduciary. Like, if you're in a court scenario, I was in a traffic scenario, and I appointed the assistant district attorney as the fiduciary. And as far as Winston says, is they cannot deny the appointment because they could lose their bar card. Well, you know, this DA denied it outright on the record, and, you know, which kind of blew me away. I was kind of like totally shocked about it. And
that's exactly what the stuff I'm trying to touch on is that when people go and expect an expected result or some sort of pre-planned, you know, obligation, like they must do this, and they don't get that, they don't understand that it might be that the parties in that room are all ignorant of the fact that they're required by law to accept that. Or perhaps they're aware, but they're all in a special little club where they cover each other's ass, and so they just don't give a, you know, they don't give a fuck. They'll just, you know, plow right over you because they know that's all you're relying on. They see, you know, hundreds of these guys come in here, these patriots, and they rely on these processes that are based in truth. Don't get me wrong. Based in truth, right, but applied incorrectly and rigidly, so there's no fluidity. So I think a lot of stuff happens and goes south because people are so committed to a certain result. And I think, Frankie, you can speak to that because you've gone in here and you've tried. You're like, okay, these are the instructions. This is how they say to do it. I'm going to go ahead and try to do it. I'm going to do everything by the T, and then you get your results.
Yeah, and I could talk into that more because I've been having a lot of traffic issues with my town here, and after that whole thing. I had done the acceptance of the tickets and all of that, and they were still kind of totally ignoring it. And I went in not as the defendant, but as the beneficiary to the estate, and I also put in all the paperwork that they say you need to have in the live birth record authenticated. You're not an enemy of the state. You're not dead. I had an affidavit of life from my doctor, and all of these different things, and they still pushed for me to come to trial.
Yeah.
So at that point, I did a habeas corpus in the higher court, which wasn't the town court. It's like the state courts, and named everybody in it and did it all right, served everybody. And then, they didn't have a hearing. It was by submission only, which meant nobody could come into a court to talk. And then the judge actually dismissed it.
Yeah.
Which at that point I went into the court and I told him, I said, this is not a dismissible item. It's a habeas corpus, which is guaranteed under the Constitution unless we're at war, and we're not at war. So, but that's what Jordan is talking about, of how, it's like the club, because I brought in the magistrate, the clerk, the DA, the ADA, the sheriff, the state troopers. I mean, and the last thing they wanted was all of these people to have to answer to me.
And I can guarantee you that they all met somehow, by some means, privately, and agreed to operate on certain terms, which were basically to, everybody's hush-hush. Everybody pretends like it's, something that could be dismissed. They're just going to dismiss it and see what you can do, because there's not really much you can do besides go to, somebody like the U.S. Marshals or an agency that's been around for, since the inception of the country. That's not working for the U.S. corporation.
Well, I put an objection on the record, that way I let them know that, that he could basically be brought up for treason on what he had done. I just left it at that.
Also, too, you mentioned that we're not at war. Are we not at war? Is not the de jure technically at war with the de facto United States?
I think it's a little bit obfuscated, if you will, for clarity purposes, the whole de jure de facto thing. I will say this. My understanding is that most of the, quote, wars that we've entered have not been declared by Congress, so technically no. And then any declaration by such a Congress would be for the U.S. corporation only, so again, no. And the Constitution, while it lies in the de jure, is still a bankruptcy document, right?
Correct.
So what I'm saying is that there's still these accounts and these imbalances, otherwise we would all be solvent and we wouldn't have any debt and everything would be just fine. Since that's not the case, I believe there's been some sort of takeover and sort of like a death grip on the original institutions of America, the original courts, the original this, the original that. And so what you're seeing is private people operating between themselves under private terms, and they're not giving you notice of what they are. And so while they're pretending to act in public office, pretending to follow the statutes and the rules and the procedures and the local codes, so on and so forth. Again, my opinion or my understanding is that everything has now shifted and it's all private. So if you're not going in there and you're not contracting with them, then you're going to lose. And that doesn't mean you can't use these processes that Frankie's talking about. If they work for you and they make sense and they're applicable to the situation, it's up to you to carry them forward. Okay. So, Frankie, it is quite possible that maybe the judge said something. They're masters at this. Maybe the judge said something like, we're not here to hear that today, or we're not here on that matter today. What we're here on is such and such and such and such. Or I'm not going to hear that right now, or I'm not going to listen to you, or, you've been charged with such and such, you know, in response to what you're saying. And that's an offer. That's not him denying everything you're doing. It's just his offer. He's saying, I want to pretend like this is the case. And if I can get you to pretend, then we're just going to proceed accordingly. So what do you think about that?
Well, there's definitely a lot of contract going on and little tricks and traps that they do use in the court to make you appear to be the defendant. I know on my last, arraignment, which was on Friday, the judge, wouldn't acknowledge that my name was on any of that paperwork. But every time he would refer to me as you or your, I would stop him and say, who is you or your? I was like, that's not me, because that's a way of them getting you to inadvertently be considered the defendant.
Yeah, that's called acquiring personal jurisdiction. If they can get an acknowledgement or an implied understanding or even a verbal response from you, which happens most of the time. Oh, my number is. Oh, my name is. My. I'm taking personal ownership of it, and therefore I'm liable for the results. So that's what he was doing to you. I do still believe that at some point, you could just say, hey, look, if you continue to choose to refer to me as you and your, I'm just going to take it as your agreement that you're referring to me as a man and that my body is no longer time or collateral for this matter. And we can just chit-chat here until you feel you're done. And then when you're done, I'm going to turn around and walk out of here. And when I do, this matter will be settled, and all the liability for doing so will fall on your shoulders. Do you understand? And he might tell you no, or we're not here to, we're not here for that matter. He might reoffer. And then you'll just have to say something of the nature of, okay, well, I'm taking what you're telling me as your agreement. And if you continue to try to speak to me, then I'm gonna agree that that's your performance that binds us in that agreement, as if you signed your name to a written contract. That will be the binding performance in permanent and irrevocable estoppels. Obviously, you can't get all of that out in the moment, but you could say something similar.
Yeah, well, what I did, when I said, is my name on any of that paperwork, or what does this have to do with me, and he didn't, respond, then I said, I take your silence as your knowing, willing, and voluntary consent that I have nothing to do with this. So I made my own contract and verbal agreement.
I like that language. I would suggest to you, though, that you definitely add, as if you had signed your name to a written express contract. Something like that will actually bring it into reality. And then maybe some terms like, as we stand here today. And if you do that, I guarantee you it'll at least perk him up enough to reoffer to you, as opposed to ignore you.
Yeah, and then he was kind of making fun because I wouldn't give him my name, and I was like, my name is private, it's not for the public use. And he was like, so then at the end he was kind of like, oh, well, what do you want me to call you, or me, you, private, he was like kind of, and, he was like kind of asked me what my name is, and I used the old Gordon Hall line. I was like, well, what exactly is a name? I go, my wife calls me honey, my dog calls me woof.
Done that one before.
And then I told him, that I was only here. First of all, the first thing I said when I walked in there was, I'm here under special appearance, not general, and, I'm only here because these two guys, with guns, shackled me and dragged me in here, So
what you were doing is using a conglomeration of a bunch of different techniques, I guess we'll say, or processes or verbal incantations, since English is a spellcasting language. And what you were running up against is a judge who was either ignorant, either felt so secure in his local vested power and protection that he just didn't care, right?
Yeah, and that was another thing. Is he's like, well, you've been in this courtroom before, and I know you're Frank Adamo. And I was like, I'm not Frank Adamo. And then he was like, I got to caution you that you shouldn't say anything without, getting an attorney to represent yourself. So, and I said, why would I need an attorney to represent myself something that I'm not.
Yeah. Well, I think our listeners need to understand this will happen all the time. They constantly press you for an attorney. They constantly press you for an attorney. I'm going to explain why. Ease of settlement of accounts. Ease of negotiations. Ease of account transfers and balances. And what I mean by that is this. Every single person who becomes an attorney and gets a bar card is responsible for having a trust, maintaining a trust account, and balancing that properly and utilizing it with the court in connection with their accounts in the background. And whether they realize it or not, all of their performance on the case is also a value, right? And so they always want somebody who's going to be an insider who's pre-guaranteed or pre-screened so their funds or their value or their energy can be used without having to get photographs of the body, without having to get fingerprints, without having to bring them in and get verbal consent through their actions in court, through an arraignment, so on and so forth, without having to go through a whole trial before they can use the accounts. Do you understand? What does your attorney do with the prosecuting attorney 9 times out of 10? What do they do, Corey?
Plea bargain.
Okay, so what are they doing? They're settling the accounting, mm-hmm. right? And any monies that they get paid for it are reportable because the court reports to the IRS just like anybody else who's the master accountant. And at that point, all of that stuff is just, it's shifted, it's settled, it's closed, and that's why you get your results, okay? In a couple of weeks, we're actually going to have one of my best friends, Quinn Eaker from Garden of Eden. He's going to come on, and he's actually going to share a story about how he gave alternate performance. And an attorney actually saw him, I guess you would say, standing up for himself, not representing himself, approached him and offered to help him. He didn't ever sign on as a formal agreement for representation. All he did was use his networking contacts in the court to get an alternate performance for Quinn to do. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is they asked him to do something inside the courtroom. He did it. They took a picture of it, and they dismissed his case right then and there with no, you know, rigmarole, no signing documents, nothing. It can be done.
With the help of the insider.
That's why they want you to have an attorney so that it's easy and fast, and they can make the turnover on the money quicker. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing to you, Frankie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, there's so much that, you know, you need to understand when you're in these courts. Just following any direction from the judge, you know, without saying I'm doing this on my own or even repeating exactly what he says. You know, I'm like you say all the time, I'm going to go and sit down, or, you know, so you're doing it of your own free will and then following an order, because then that instantly puts you underneath their, you know, authority and jurisdiction.
Absolutely. And you're really good at that. I've heard you do that before. So there was some extra level of either incentive or intent behind that judge. I have experienced that the local judges in some cases are extremely entrenched in that town. Okay, so he's got backup all over the place.
And I mean, I've been brought before this judge. This is the third time they're saying that I'm driving without a license.
Oh, man.
And, you know, the whole thing was brought up because I did acceptances of the tickets, and then I did a three-step process against the courts where no one ever said that the balance wasn't zero, which I recorded in the county recorder of all of them. So, you know, the first time I was in there trying to settle it, I was, you know, honest. And I said, this is all based on false information. I said, you know, it's all in the county recorder. I brought certified copies out. You know, nobody denied that it wasn't right, but they still ignored it and tried to get me to come to trial to face these, you know, alleged charges.
This is a very unique situation, but it also brings to light the fact that, again, we were talking about the Patriot people, how to do it right instead of wrong, and how to actually extract substance out of any given process or thing that you're doing and use it and apply it to your situation. I think, Frankie, what you've done in the past with the A for V has been successful in some cases, especially for your son. You were telling me he's got 100% success rate.
But
whatever the case may be, for any given situation, it's always going to be unique. And you never know when what's proper and what's correct is going to be thrown out, ignored, treated like trash, or taken from you, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that the next level of this is that you, we'll work together on it, but and we'll talk about that off air, but I'm thinking that we want
to... Yeah, and also you need to let everyone know that, you know, I did the do not stop and do not detain.
Yes.
That, you know, was presented through a notary to the sheriff, not only the sheriff in my town, like 10 other sheriffs, because I wanted every sheriff in all the areas that I travel through to be aware that there's a constitutional challenge.
That's right.
And that I'm not responsible for that. And that's, you know, some of Jonah Bay's stuff, which I think is also a great, you know, person to study. If you're going down these roads, because
I'll say this, I totally back Jonah Bay. We both went to a seminar together.
Yep.
I've hybridized some of his stuff and added mine to it when it didn't work in a certain situation. So again, it's not the process. It's the people you're dealing with. It's the jurisdiction you're in. It's whatever entrenched interests are there. What I want our listeners to be aware of is that wordsmithing involves creating a solution from scratch. You must author it, right? So we've got to look at your situation in the light of you've done everything right. You've given all notice. They've supposedly agreed, but now nobody's doing anything about it. So now we need to find the right way to enforce or get their performance mandated. And I have a few ideas that we'll talk about off air. But that's what our listeners should understand, is that everything is negotiable. And Corey, right. what do you think about this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I was, this whole time, I'm thinking enforcement, enforcement, enforcement. You know, I mean, between the three of us, we've covered a lot of ground in our studies. A lot of that, I'm sure we've covered the same stuff. And it always, in my view, comes down to enforcement. You know, so a lot of these processes and so forth, acceptance for value and all the way up the list to, you know, our UCC filings on the name or the person, what have you. All of these things ultimately, and as you say, each situation is unique, but they ultimately come down to enforcement. Because if you don't know how to get these people into a contract, get them locked into a contract and enforce it, they're going to ignore it.
That's right. Okay, I think what we're going to do now is we'll go back to commercial, and when we come back, I'm going to have Frankie describe exactly what happened to him this last time, the interaction with the judge, and we'll do a little role play, because we do a lot of talking about doing it right and how to do this and how to do that. I want our listeners to hear, at least directly, sort of the nuances of real-time contracting. In the moment, free-flowing. So, Frankie, if you're willing, when we come back, I'm going to have you play the judge, since you have knowledge of what he was saying to you. And I'll sort of take on your role. And, Corey, if you want to jump in a bit, you can. And I think it's going to be a great exercise for our listeners to hear. So we're going to run a commercial, and we'll be right back.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We've got Corey and we've got Frankie on the line. We've had a very fulfilling show so far. We started off our intro talking a little bit about the Burns Oregon situation and using it as a springboard, the entirety of the way it was handled as sort of a way to not do it. And we're talking about ways to do it right. Frankie was earlier, he was talking about his issues in his local jurisdiction, a very small town in New York. He's got a sort of a recalcitrant judge and a DA who are just doing what they want and not following not only the law, not only the entrenched rights of the people, but they're also not following common sense and contracting principles. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go through a little bit of what Frankie had to go through when he was arrested for his traffic charges. And Frankie, if you just want to lead out however you want, I'm going to follow you and I'll just respond accordingly. Okay.
Okay. So I was just got in my car and I was driving down the block from the post office. And, you know, I looked to my left and I could see a state trooper, you know, vehicle coming down, you know, Main Street. So, you know, I reached for my seatbelt to go and put it on and, you know, and then he passes and, you know, I make the right and then I see that he's pulled over on the far corner. And as soon as I passed him and made the right turn, he put his lights on and pulled me over immediately. And, you know, this is actually the third time the same state trooper has stopped me. You know, we had some issues in the beginning because he would, you know, ask me for a license, and I was like, why would I need a license, you know, if I'm just traveling? And then, you know, at the time I had an inspection that it was no good, but, you know, the color was off, so I made my own inspection sticker that looked similar, but if you look close, it said inspected by Frank, you know. Right.
I want to make it clear to our listeners that, yeah, you do have a right to travel, but you also have a duty to protect everybody else from your car, meaning you must be privately insured somehow or standing on your full unlimited commercial liability. You also have a responsibility not to, you know, hit anybody or damage their vehicle, so on and so forth. And what comes with that is the rights to create your own licensure, whatever you want to call it, for your own little operation. Like, I'm just me traveling around. Here's a way you guys can identify me and see who I am, but it's not necessarily a state-sponsored license. Okay, so that's what Frankie's talking about. And I'm sorry to interrupt you if you'll go ahead and continue.
No, that's okay. So, you know, of course, so I pull over, he gets out of the car, he's asked me for my driver's license, you know, and I says, why would I need a driver's license if I'm only traveling? I says, you know, driving is a commercial endeavor. I says, this isn't a cab or a truck or a bus. I said, nobody's paying me for this. I said, I'm just traveling in my vehicle. And he was like, well, do you have any other ID? So, you know, I have a passport card, which I produced. And then he, you know, goes back to the car, you know, changes my name into the all capital letter, Frank Amadamo, comes back and he's like, you know, you're under arrest. And then they drive me, you know, three blocks away to the town court. You know, in handcuffs.
So I want to make something clear to our listeners. Generally, what happens is today's day and age, you will be arrested on whatever they're charging you with. You'll be put in the back of a squad car. You'll be taken down to the entrance of the jail facility, which is called the Sally Port. Look that up and what that means in commerce. And then they'll take you through the port of entrance or port of entry into the jail. They'll do the screening questions, so on and so forth. Then you're booked in, you wait for about 12 to 24 hours, you're brought before a magistrate who somehow already knows your charges, already has a file in his hands with some sort of investigation that's been conducted without your knowledge or your consent, and then they get your performance verbally to contract into whatever their charges are. They back it off your living's energy, the birth certificate, social trust, so on and so forth, and they have you a surety and they put you in, you know, the collateral, which is your body, they put it in a cell until the bonds mature. That is the normal process. The warehouse. Mm-hmm. Now, what Frankie just told me is that they took him directly to the magistrate. And Frank, will you please continue?
So, you know, when I got there, first thing I asked is this being recorded? He said, yes. I says, okay, I'm here under special appearance, not general. You know, I says, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't, you know, kidnapped by these two thugs behind me and, you know, shackled and brought here. So then he goes and, you know, he goes through the whole thing, like, you know, what's your name? You know, which I didn't give. I said, my name is Private. What's your name? You know, which he didn't answer. Then he was like, you know, you've been charged with blah, blah, blah. And I was like, who don't refer to me as you? And then he read the charges. He's like, do you understand the charges? He's like, no, I don't understand. And he's like, you know, you didn't have your seatbelt on. You understand? I was like, no, I don't understand. He's like, you aggravated unlicensed. You understand? I was like, no, I don't understand. I go, what does any of this have to do with me? Where, you know, he doesn't say anything. And I was like, I'll accept your silence, your knowing, willing, and voluntary agreement that this has nothing to do with me. And then, you know, he's just kind of going on. He's like, I know that you're Frank Adamo. You've been in this court before. And I was like, I'm not Frank Adamo, you know. And where do you see my name on any of this paperwork? And
okay, I'm going to analyze this real quick because I want to acknowledge you for something. You're doing a masterful job of not granting or consenting to jurisdiction. Okay, I've done some of these techniques before. The whole, you know, my name's Private, all that jazz. What I will say is this: I think it was a test for you, Frank, because they brought you directly before the magistrate. Right? Okay. Now at that point, he's going to test you and see if he can just resolve this. That's their risk management. It's always profits, you know, and risk consideration. Can they get you somehow one last time to try to volunteer? Now what I'm hearing is that since they brought you directly before the magistrate, it probably might have been a good idea to just immediately say, hey, look, I understand that this shouldn't have happened already. I should not be here, but I'm willing, right? I'm willing and able to help you with this on my own terms, and then ask for the private hearing. And I think you did ask for the private hearing, and
I did ask for an in-camera hearing, which he denied because he said the prosecutor wasn't there.
But there's no because. There's no because. That was his offer to you, and it's nonsensical. And that's how I always pick up on a trick. I'll tell you that. Right. I always pick up on a trick when it doesn't make sense. Right. In camera means in chambers. It means privately. And while, yes, typically two attorneys can meet in chambers with a judge, you see that on TV with all the, you know, Law and Order and all that stuff. Right. But what's happening in camera typically is somebody is sitting down with another party privately, and there's no requirements for anybody else to attend or be there or give notice. None of that. So for him to use as an excuse or an offer to you, oh, no, I can't do that because the prosecutor's not there, that was a test. He tested you. Does this guy really know how to renegotiate? Does he really know what he's asking for? Does he really know why I'm answering this way? And if he sees that you don't, even if you say the right words and you're doing it correctly, which it sounds like you were doing a form of correct, they're still going to railroad you. They're going to use the law of maritime. They're going to look around the courtroom and they're going to say, what vessel can we see since this guy is refusing to understand? He's refusing to give us surety. He's masterfully evaded our jurisdiction. So now we have to reach into his personal bubble and snatch his body. And that's what happened. They set bail and they put you in jail, did they not?
Yeah. The one thing I didn't do, which I should have done, is, you know, he said it was going to be $1,000 cash bail, a $2,000 bond. You know, and I asked him if he could produce a bond so I could sign it in full accord and satisfaction, and that way we don't waste any more of the court's valuable time. And he says, we're not in the business of producing bonds.
Were you handcuffed?
Yeah, I was handcuffed behind my back. So then I says, so you're telling me that this court doesn't make bid bonds and performance bonds, and, you know.
He can't tell you that. If he told you that on the public record without being in private, he would be acknowledging something he's been sworn not to, and I believe he would never be able to hold public office again.
All right.
Let's do this.
What I should have done is when he offered to put me in jail, I should have said, I do not agree to that offer, you know, which is one thing I didn't say that I should have.
This is what I lead out with, Frankie, and you might be able to use this successfully. I'm not aware of that, and I'm really not agreeable to those terms. What I am aware of and agreeable to is yada, 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 and I'll say my piece, even if I've said it before and he's reoffered to me. I'll say it again, and then I'll give them something as an offer. So, that being said, if I were to stand on my head and spin around and breakdance for 30 seconds, would you be willing or able, as we stand here today, to, you know, obviously I don't say that, but I give them something, you know? And would you be able to dismiss this, discharge the defendant, release these binds from my body, and allow my body to walk freely from his premises, free from collateral, right? So let's go ahead and do a little role-playing, if you can. If you'll just... we'll just be the judge and just run through whatever you want to do. You get as crazy as you want, and I'll see what I can handle.
What's your name?
Try it again. I didn't hear you.
I said, what's your name? Come into the bar.
Oh, hi. How are you doing today?
Good. And what's your name?
How can I assist you? What's the intent behind your request?
I need to make sure I have the right party here. What's your name?
Which party are you looking for? I'd be happy to assist you.
Listen, you've been charged with some serious crimes here. Now, you know, well, I don't want to play around with you. Just, what's your name?
I hear what you're saying, but I don't understand the charges because I've not been presented with them, and I'm not aware of being surety or liable for those charges. Here's what I am going to do. I'm going to offer to resolve this matter for all of you, right? And you can call me or refer to me as whatever you want. And I'm going to take it as your agreement that this body that you see standing before you right now, is not collateral for any of your business that you're conducting today. But I will be happy to assist you with any type of verbal performance to settle this matter. Do you understand?
Listen, I'm the one answering the questions here. Listen, you've been charged with these serious crimes. And the yada, yada, yada. Do you understand these charges?
I hear you asking a question and making a statement. In regards to your question, I'll refer you to my previous answer. In regards to your statement, I'm not aware of the charges. How can I help you? Let's resolve this so we can all go home here today, and you can go be with your family, and I walk out of here with these binds released from my body. Are you willing and able in some way or form to sit with me privately so that can be accomplished? I'm willing to do that in good faith.
So you've been charged with some serious crimes here, and these are the charges. Do you understand these charges?
I'm going to acknowledge that this is the third time you've asked me the same thing, so my response remains the same, and I'm going to offer to you, again, that if my body is not collateral and I'm able to be released from these
Okay, okay, listen. Okay? I'm going to accept your not guilty plea. I'm going to... put a not guilty plea in for you.
I'm taking what you're telling me and your choice to enter a not guilty plea as your choice expressly to waive all of your rights, titles, and immunities, and my body and my time is no longer collateral. That means that even if you throw me in a jail cell, I'm going to continue to operate under the terms that my body and time are no longer collateral, and you're operating ultra vires without your jurisdiction and without immunities when I come to see you in court. Do you understand? How can I assist you to settle this matter?
Okay, I think that was excellent.
I'm gonna set a hearing date for this matter. 30 days out.
I would be willing to agree to you setting a hearing date 30 days out, as long as my body is instantly released from this courtroom, instantly released from these premises, and it's not collateral to appear again, and that I can somehow offer you some verbal or written appearance or written performance, whereby this matter can be settled, or we can just operate on the terms that when I walk out of here, I never have to come back again, and you guys are liable to settle it. And you can pretend like I'm liable. You can send stuff to me if that helps you, but we understand that I'm going to return it, and I'm not obligated, and no warrant will issue. Do you understand? You can go anywhere with this, right? You really can. It's all fluid. Talk to them like a real person. Okay? What do you think?
Yeah,
it is all verbal contract. So the trick is not to give any of that information that pulls you in as the defendant or as, to be liable. And they're not going to
negotiate. Always renegotiate what your terms are.
Guys, I do want everybody to understand, listeners, I'm not naive. Okay, I've been dragged away with my feet off the ground by five bailiffs while I'm saying this. Okay.
Take him away.
But guess what? They let me out 3 days later with no charges whatsoever.
Right.
You understand? You must persist, and that's what I've done, and that's what I teach: persistence, fluidity, negotiations, reoffering, recontracting. Do it, you'll get your success. Frankie, you've got a wonderful base foundation. You've got a wonderful base knowledge. You've tried all of these different things, so you know what absolutely works and doesn't work. You know what should work but doesn't work because of your special situation. And now, understanding that, we're going to go ahead and move into the next level, and I'll assist you with that, obviously, privately. And so I really appreciate you coming on here, man. Thank you for sharing your story. I hope our listeners were able to get that.
No problem. You know, I'm a guy who thinks that more people need to learn and understand what's going on in the real world, and the more people whose eyes we could open up to see what's really going on will shift this planet faster.
Totally agree.
Indeed. And that,
yeah. Corey, what do you think, your closing comments?
I think it was a great show, Frank. Good to hear from you, man. It's been a while. It really comes down to wordsmithing, man. Knowing how to roll in the moment and, deal man to man, really, or man to woman with these people. I think if we keep that in the forefront and we recognize, and also at the same time, it's a public jurisdiction. So, as you said earlier, they're obligated not to reveal certain things in the public. And that's why I would say that in-camera appearance, that private appearance, is very important, because at the very least, then you can talk man-to-man and you can negotiate. Right. Your hands are tied when you're in that public forum, because there's certain stuff that you can't say, or that they cannot acknowledge in the public. And also, as far as our role-playing thing, it's going to get to the point where if it keeps going back and forth, you're going to get that contempt charge. And then they're going to throw you in for as long as they want.
Right. That's right. We might talk about that in a future show, how to avoid that. It's all good stuff. I appreciate you. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you, listeners, for listening and understanding our words. We're going to go ahead and wrap up for this week. Next week, we do have a spiritual rapper. And his name is Ross. He's one of my good buddies as well. And he will be talking about how he can spread his message and enlighten people using the socially accepted vernacular and tools that are existing in society today. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.